Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggly.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
What's up, everybody? This is King Eric, and you are now tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio, episode 506. And this show is sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, Buddy Boy Entertainment, This is Boutique Core Financial, Fleetwood and the Cart Picker, Screwball Radio. And I got my co-host, T-Max, with the facts alongside with me. What's good, man?
Man, what's going on, y'all? It's another fantastic Friday, the end of the week. Free to get loose and do what you do. Shout, I mean, look, man, it's just one of them days that you really feel good to be on the frequency of always kicking what's, you know, the most fantastic. There's a special show tonight, as they all are. Tonight's guest is a curator of West Coast culture. The man is a maven in the art of making movies in terms of shooting videos, capturing the essence of that energy of what it means for that real Cali life, living it right. He's a scholar in terms of the shoots. He's a fantastic friend and absolutely tremendous and his unlimited talent of everything he touches, that he turns his productions into platinum. And he's worked with some of your favorite artists out there, you know, from MC8 to Ice-T to Corrupt, and a cast of thousands that equate to legendary. And he is definitely legendary in his own right of a luminary. Without further ado, Mr. Ray Westlife, what's going on, man?
Had to bring him on. So you on, brother?
Okay. You on?
Hold
we got him
one
on?
1 second.
Okay.
Hold on 1 second. We're going to try to bring him on.
Okay.
I looked at the wrong number. Yeah, I do. I probably looked at the wrong number. It's all good, man. Sometimes that happens.
All righty.
Well, you know, while we get this solved, man, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio every Friday. We had a dope show last night with Big Prodigy. That was one of our best shows last night. So we're going to definitely post that full interview up this coming week. We got the Razzcaz interview up.
Yeah, man. I mean, one thing about it is when you look at having, I mean, King, it's still hard to believe, man. It's almost a month later and we've broken 500 shows, man. I mean, this is a blessing in itself to be able to do what we do in terms of being able to bring, you know, our listeners to do right by the culture and to be able to be, you know, caretakers of the culture in reference to making sure that we bring everyone the very best in terms of hip-hop commentary, conversation, and history, and not necessarily in that order. But we definitely try to do our part in terms of what we do.
Absolutely. And on top of that, I'm letting y'all know that next week is my birthday, so I'm taking cash, food, Cash App donations. I'm taking all that, man. I'm also, I got some of the ladies that are going to try to do some type of video collage for me. You know, they're trying to, I'm on my Martin Payne-ish, you know what I'm saying? They got to look out for me, you know?
Okay.
So, we got that incoming. That's coming on Thursday.
Okay.
And all they got to do, just send me the video. I'll hook the music up. Give y'all the drop, give y'all the love, and go from there.
Absolutely.
Because, man, I'm like, yo, as much work as we put in, I don't want just my flowers. I want all the donations. You feel me?
Look, it's always acknowledged by the dollars. It's always the most definitive. What we looking like, King? We got Ray on yet, or?
Yeah, he's going to call shortly.
Okay.
Definitely.
So what we got in terms of what's been happening this week in the game, man?
Well, and going on what we talking about, man, we was talking about this yesterday. Wait, hold on. We got him on now.
Okay. Ray, what's going on, man?
What's up, man? What are you guys up to?
We're good.
I was just trying to find my phone charger real quick.
It's good.
Right here,
it's
man.
All good. Definitely, man. Ray, look, it's great to have you with us. As we were saying at the beginning of the show, in terms of all the infinite accomplishments you contributed to West Coast culture, being one of the dopest videographers, you know, video producers, you know, even having your own podcast, and everything you've done in terms of through your lens of life, capturing that West Coast living and all the legends, you know, that reside, you know, on the left
right.
side. This is an honor and a pleasure to have you on, man. This is an extreme privilege of someone of your prestige, you know, and tremendous talent to, you know, spend a little bit of time with us.
Right. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Definitely. So I guess we're going to get right into it, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, a little bit of the history of Ray West's life and how you got started, you know, everything from the beginning up to now.
You just closed your
man,
mouth.
I'm from San Fernando Valley. I grew up all over the east side of the San Fernando Valley, you know, Pacoima, San Fernando, Van Nuys, Panorama City. And then, you know, in high school, I don't know about you guys, but everybody trying to be rappers and stuff in high school, and but back then, remember in the 90s, nobody was selling beats for $25. So I started getting into the production game and started learning how to make my own beats, and then I just kind of gave up the rapping and just did beats. And then I did that from 98 up until, I still do it now, I still make beats. And then I got into the video, the music video game and stuff, probably like in 05, 06.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and still doing it to this day. I was doing like a lot of local artists. And then I had a cousin who was like on a street team for Loud Records. So he was rapper too. And so I started shooting his videos and my brother's videos. And anybody from the neighborhood that wanted videos, and I was learning how to do it. And then I had done probably about 50, 60 videos just with a lot of underground artists. And then I met this rapper in Rialto. His name, he goes by Sapata the Ghost. And I sent him a beat, and he got this other rapper on there named Young Trav from Riverside. So I didn't know who he was, so we did the track, and then they had got at me and said, "Hey, we like the beat you did. We wrote a song. I got MC8 going on the song. Do you want to come to the session?" And then he texted me again and said, "Make sure you bring your camera." I was like, "Okay." So I get to the session, and after they record and everything, he tells me, "I need you to shoot the video for MC8. Compton Most Wanted, MC8. And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, the camera guy canceled. That's why I told you to bring your camera." So I was like, "Okay." So that was like my first big mainstream type of video with MC8. That was in like 2000. Man, my dates are kind of bad. I want to say 2009, 2010. And so that was how I got into the video with the music videos and stuff. And as far as beat production, I've been doing it since the late 90s, and I've been in every studio in LA, rocked with a lot of the legends in the West Coast, and just been pushing. And then with the music videos, and I do documentaries too, but with just the multimedia game, yeah, I've been going since 2005, 2006, but I didn't get my first big break till like 2009, 2010. And then from there, it was like, you shot with MC8. Now I'm shooting with Glasses Malone. And then, just went down there from Coolio to Yuck Mouth from the Loonies, Chill, Compton's Most Wanted, J.O. Felony, and it just kept going. And now I'm at where I'm at, just working with everybody.
Oh, wow. I mean, and when you say Rialto, of course, we got to shout out Ross T, too, man. Of course,
Exactly.
Yeah, man. And when you think about it, Ray, you're looking at the work. I mean, you're part of a very, very, very distinguished class among so many coming from the West Coast. Of course, we got to shout out, Jay Simp.
There's a lot of dope videographers, man. Jay Sin, I met him before. I was actually at the he shot the video for Dave East and MC8. We shot that over there in downtown LA somewhere. And I was there. I met him. He's cool. And then you got Baker that messes with Smith.
Dada. Yeah, then, Dada.
Yeah, Dada. And then you got LA Icon. He does a lot of LA artist videos. You got another Mexican cat, Guap Productions. He does Snoop stuff too. Yeah, there's a lot of dope videographers out there, and I notice a lot of people stick with their team, even though we branch out and do our stuff. But when they like that one look, and they like when I started getting the videos with the Chill from Compton's Most Wanted, he straight out told me, "I don't want another videographer, so I want to work with you on this video. If it works out and everything works out, I want you to be strictly my videographer. Like, I don't want to branch out to nobody. Let's just I want to build with one person." So that was like 4 years ago. We shot a video and he loved it, and we just been rocking ever since. And and a lot of the underground artists that I work with too, they were on that same thing. A lot of people actually, it was kind of like, I was kind of like, wow, a lot of them didn't have videos out. A lot of underground artists that I was trying to get with, they didn't have videos out, and they were trying to find videographers. But then they would tell me, "Man, this videographer's trying to charge me $3,000. This guy's trying to charge me $2,500 just for a 2-minute video." And so then when I seen that, I was like, you know what? I got to start being that guy that makes it, yeah, with the mainstream artists, yeah, you have your certain prices. Some of them are with labels, so it's a different whole nother tier of business. But with the underground artists, paying out of what the underground artist is paying out of his pocket, or the independent artist, he, you know, not a lot of these guys could afford that. So I started making it affordable, and let's work and let's try this, and you know, and a lot of them have never even done a video, so they're kind of like, you just direct the whole thing, tell me what to do. So and that's kind of fun. I like working with up-and-comers and newbie and new independent artists that are building, and they want to build with you. And I see that more fun, and the journey just seems more, it's fun, it's interesting. You're always more, the ideas that are coming out, and it's more exciting, you know, because these guys are up-and-comers, they haven't done nothing, so you're there when they're starting their first, some of these guys, I'm shooting their first video, so it's like, man, this is fun, let's make it dope, let's have a good time. And then, man, I can't even tell you one artist, but almost every artist I work with, especially the underground and the independent artists, it's a great experience. It's a pleasure. It's they tell me too, you know, I want you to shoot the next one. It was a fun experience with you. It didn't seem business at all. It just seemed like two homies out there shooting a video. And I said, that's good. I'm glad you feel comfortable like that. So a lot of guys who I shot their first videos, they still keep coming at me, and now we're like on video 20 and shit. You know, it's just like we just keep working.
That's dope. And I mean, one thing about it too, Ray, is that when you're thinking about video productions, you want everything to be organic, because that is important,
right,
between the artist and the producer director, because there's a particular vision that is set. There's a type of, you know, image that wants to be conveyed, all the way from the motions it's going to come to me too, just randomly while I'm out in this thought process. The filter, yes. See, there it is, the filter.
Yeah.
How you want to filter? Do you want the grainy filter? Do you want the sound footage filter? Do you want it, you know, high def, you know, in the 4, in the 5K? Do you want that vintage 80s? It's all about the, yeah, it's all about the song and how the visual,
you're right,
complemented. When we look at some of the iconic videos from all genres, when we think about, you know, Run DMC and Aerosmith, when they did Walk This Way, when we think about,
yeah,
Anthrax and Public Enemy, Bring the Noise, when we think about,
right,
you know, Megadeth, you know, Holy War, The Punishment Due, when we think about Ice Cube, Steady Mobbing, when we think about Cypress,
exactly,
Hill, you know, Real Estate, you know, I mean, it just, Geniuses, I Got Your Back, you know, these are, and I mean, look, we haven't even gotten to some of the, like, super big productions, of course, like Michael Jackson's, you know,
right,
the Thriller, time, you know, Bad,
Thriller.
Yeah, I mean, when, one thing about it, and you understand the assignment so astutely, Ray, is that when you are directing a video, you are, in a sense, helping that artist brand management. You are really, really,
exactly,
setting the template in terms of their, it's like a job interview in terms of what the audience is seeing and the impression they get of the artist. If it's a new artist, they're like, okay, dude got some hot ass, you know, footage right here. And if it's an artist that is already established, it shows that they haven't fallen off in terms of, it's like, even as years go on, how they've aged, it shows a graceful maturation, an evolution, as opposed to looking at somebody, you know, looking like they were washed up and they needed to quit. When you think about the video era back then and what it is now, Ray, because we'll get into the backstory of you doing music producing as well. We're going to get back to that because we want to know some of your influences,
yeah, yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
But what was, when you look at it from that perspective of the, how do you feel videos have changed from what they were 30 years ago to what they are today?
Well, now you don't need a whole crew. You don't need those big cameras anymore. Everything's like handheld now. So, you know, you could, it's a lot easier to, one person just goes out there and they could shoot it. And then now you're editing on computers compared to cutting film, chopping up film, you know? And I actually got to see the process of chopping up film. And somebody did it in front of me and they showed me, and that is a tedious process. So I think like back then, just like making music back then, you know, you're using reels, you're using DATs and ADATs. It's not on computers. So back then there wasn't a lot of people doing it. So I see how the process is just tedious, man. Like I could see how they're chopping up film with a little screen on there and all that, and the little, it's gone a long way. Like now, I mean, if you really wanted to, you could pull out your iPhone, film with your phone, throw it in your computer, chop it up, and throw it on IG. Now the world saw it in a matter of a day compared to you shooting 15, 16 hours back in the day to now we got to take 3 months to edit the video. And nowadays with the attention span of people, it's like you shoot the video on Friday. They want it out by the next week. If you could have it out that quick. And
right.
Now they want to get it out there and release. Like, it's quick. Everything's just quick now. It's fast. And then back then, it was just more of a tedious process. Not everybody was doing it. There wasn't a producer or videographer on every corner. And it's just digital now. Everything's digital. And, like, my favorite video of all time is the DOC, the formula. And, like in the beginning of the video, him and Easy. Like nowadays, I see people just guerrilla style. We just jump out. We could shoot. Back then, I kind of see more of a concept to videos. And not saying that nowadays they don't do that, because there is a lot of videos like that. But a lot of it is just like, you know what? Get that Porsche, stand in front of it, and shoot, and we're done. But back then, it's like, hey, we need a story. Let's do this. And like the formula, I love that video because, you know, in the beginning, him and Easy are auditioning all these rappers. They're trying to find the best rapper. And then when the song starts, Dr. Dre just creates the best rapper, and it's the DLC. And I still, to this day, I wish, man, if they ever did a remake, I want to shoot that video. And
My
favorite video. That one and Kid Frost's La Raza. I was like, those are my two favorite videos. And but nowadays, it's just... Well, look at back then. You know, you see the videos. They're kind of like movie-ish. They got cinematic stuff. Nowadays, there's crazy effects and videos, and it looks like a sci-fi movie. And you're like, and I got like the OG rappers, when I film with them, they don't like all that crazy shit in there sometimes. They're just kind of like, hey, man, you know, like, let's keep it whatever, whatever. And the youngsters that I shoot for, some of them want that too, but some of these videos got way too many crazy effects, and I'm just like, man. You gotta just see the dude rapping because there's so much crazy stuff going on. I just think it's more, it's like I call it like a disposable era these days. Like, you shoot a video, they release it, 2 months from now, you gotta shoot another one because they don't even give a shit about the first one now. It's like it already ran, 2 months, it ran its course, and go to the next one. And back then, in the 90s, especially in the 80s, you shoot a video, and we're still watching those videos to this day. 30 years later, 40 years later, you know, like, we're still watching these videos. And I just see that a lot with the music industry these days. If I could have been a videographer in the 90s, man, I would have loved to have been in that era of video. But nowadays, you know, you go, somebody saves up $1,000, they go buy a decent camera, they got it, now they're shooting. Back then, you had to have a lot of money to get a video camera. So I think computers made it real easy for people to just wanting, you know, to shoot videos now. I mean, I don't mind it because it's a lot easier. I grew up in the 90s when production, you know, you're looking at keyboards with a screen with calculators the size of your thumb. You know, the size of your thumb. Now you're on 65-inch TVs with your computer connected, and you could sit in there and slice and dice and samples and songs, and it's just quick now, you know? But, yeah, I just see everything now is just fast-paced. You know, we shoot today, they want it out by next week. And if you're a videographer that takes forever on your videos, they're not going to use you again. They're going to be like, hey, man, we shot that 2 months ago when the song had buzz. Now you're giving me the video 2 months later, and it's like, that song's already old. We don't even give a shit about that no more. They want everything fast now. And in the 90s, you know, back then, you might see a snippet on a magazine or something that, oh, look, they shot NWA shot a video. But then 3 months later, you're like, hey, that video just came out that they shot 3-4 months ago. And now it's like they want it out now, next week, within 2 weeks. That's why I tell people I could have your video out within 2 weeks. Usually it's a week, but unless I'm backed up on work, but people want it now. I even have people tell me, hey, I'll pay you extra to put a rush on it. If we shot Friday, can you have it out by Wednesday? I'll even pay extra. I want it out now. Like, I want to get it out now. And I'm like, damn. Okay. It's just real quick now. Everything's quick. And you could drop a video today, and then 2 months from now, they're looking at you like, how come you haven't dropped another one? And in the 90s, you drop the video now. 2-3 months later, you're still good. You could drop a video 6 months later, 7 months later. But now to keep the artist moving, you got to be dropping albums every quarter of the year. You got to be dropping videos for that album. If you dropped an album, 2-3 videos. Next album, I got guys that are telling me, we just dropped an album last Friday, but we want to start shooting videos for the next album that's dropping 3-4 months from now. And I'm like, damn, you guys are already moving. Like, everything's just moving fast. Everything's fast paced. And sometimes you're like, damn, you don't even get to sit down and enjoy it because it's going to the next one already. And then the next one. So, yeah, the video game and the whole music game period is just quick these days. And I think that has a lot to do with social media, computers. Everything's not analog no more. It's all digital. And it just goes from there, you know?
Yeah, everybody's very unsatisfiable. It's like everybody has fast food mentality.
Right, yeah.
And when you think about it from a perspective of how the videos have produced now, you know, King and myself, we grew up in that era as well, you know.
Right.
I mean, we think about world premieres on videos, you know, it was a very big deal. We said this so many times on the show with different guests. If you were an artist back in the day and just the idea that a label was going to get behind you to put out a video,
right.
It was a big deal. You know what I mean? This was actually like you get a camera crew, like, you know, yo, we get in the hood together. I mean, we think about when the Wu-Tang dropped Protect Your Neck, and it was basically shot with a video camera, but the shit was so raw, it's like, wow, you know, and I mean,
right.
Of course, we think about, you know, the Snoop Doggy Dogg, What's My Name, video released in 93,
right.
Which at the time was the most expensive video ever shot, you know, because this was the first time we started really seeing those special effects. I think at the time, if King gets the numbers right with me, I believe that video was like, that thing.
You know what,
like,
you know what, not to cut you off. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
So when Snoop dropped What's My Name, that was at that moment, that was the most expensive video?
Yeah, that was the most expensive video at the time, I believe, at least for a rap video. So I believe that video was like $1.5 million.
I was thinking, because, you know, Death Row had money to blow at that time. I was thinking Murder Was the Case and Natural Born Killers were.
But Snoop, what he's talking about, when Snoop dropped that one at that moment, Natural Born Killers came way after that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 94. That was 94 with Dre and Cube. But it showed how a lot of times, and when we think about the video era, we saw like some of the most comedic videos, you know, that were, we saw a lot of comedia videos like, you know, that had comedy elements to it.
Eazy-E's Compton City G's, when they're kind of
bringing back
what Dre and Snoop used. That was AJ Johnson, right? He was in both of the videos.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about what Snoop and Dre did with Fuck With Dre Day, you know, I mean, you know, that was basically, you know, when they was, I mean, from the opening, I mean, look, when you saw Dre, we saw the dude with Easy. They were supposed to be Jerry Heller, you know, I mean, and they said, nah, I work for Sleazy E. So we're seeing this. So it's
right.
This is the comedy aspect.
Right.
And then we saw, but when you look at the video aspect, it was about creating art. I mean, we saw those videos to some of the most seriously dramatic poignant, like, you know, Guns N' Roses, November Rain. You know, we
and remember
think about
back in
Aaron,
the
Mm-hmm.
back in the early 90s,
yeah, no. mm-hmm.
it wasn't like now. You go to YouTube, because there was no YouTube. We used to go to on the box, remember?
Yeah, shout out Ralph McDaniels, Uncle Ralph. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you would order it through your phone, and they would charge your phone bill.
I mean, it's wild to see how when you look at technology from how it evolved. I mean, we think about the videos. I mean, just how it evolved, the dramatic aspects. I mean, if we think about Aaron Hall's "I Miss You." I mean, and even aside from his personal issues. You know,
right.
R. Kelly, when he did the download video, oh, my God, that's, woo.
Yeah.
Start seeing the drama.
Well, you know what?
We
start seeing the drama.
Yeah, exactly. And still to this day, man, it was shot in the 80s, but you go back and watch Thriller, and Thriller is still, like, awesome. Like you look at that and you're like, who? You're like, man, this came out in the 80s and it still holds weight now. I'm not talking about the actual song. Obviously, the song's dope, but the way they shot that video is like, to this day, it still holds weight, and it probably will forever.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
I was doing my Googles, right?
Okay.
I found what the most expensive video of all time was, and that was Michael Jackson's Scream.
I believe it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was set to scale with a 13-piece set, $65,000 worth of CGI spaceship, $175,000 spent on lighting alone. Plus, he was on their anime shit way early before everybody else were. So you know that cost of the
group. Right. Especially back then, yeah.
And you got to think about it, man, y'all got to remember this, too. About Michael Jackson during the time when, you know, God rest his soul, when Mike was alive, you know, and when you had a Michael Jackson premiere, that was like major, that was like, look, they were pre-empt television programming just to have a block for Michael's video.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, what, 1991, when they did the Remember the Time video. And I mean,
right.
Look, then we see it, because I don't even think,
is that the one Magic Johnson was in?
Yeah, that's the one Magic Johnson was in. That was Eddie Murphy. That was Beverly Johnson. Or was that Iman? I think it was Iman. It was, you know, of course, Magic Johnson. Eddie Murphy was in it.
Michael Clark Duncan.
I mean, you know, of course, Michael and Eddie were really good friends. You know, so it was, I mean, when you see, and of course, you had to love the historical context of Egypt because it was showing, because a lot of people have to understand, Egypt is in Africa. Who was in Africa? Who's indigenous? Black people. And the way that they did it to really show appreciation for our ancestors there from Kemet, which is the ancient name of Egypt, to see that in terms of the... It had its comedy aspect from the talent, you know, the king, the queen, if she was not entertained. And then, of course, Michael, he comes in. And then, of course, like any Michael Jackson video, you're going to have, or a lot of them, you're going to have the dance routines. I mean, it was literally a big-time production.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing about Michael Joseph Jackson, he was going to give you a show for the video, and he was going to give you a show, I mean, on the stage. If there is one live video I really loved that Mike did, it was the Just Another Part of Me live version. I mean,
the dirt
on the album was one thing, but that video version in terms of the live instruments,
right.
That's one of the best live videos I've ever seen of a live performance.
Hey, yeah, you know what? Talking about live videos, like back then, especially the 80s and 90s, a lot of the rock bands, their videos were them actually performing on stage, and they made it like that was the video.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Motley Crue, one of my favorite songs they did, Wild Side. I believe they did that at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. It was a two-night video shoot. And they did it on the process of doing their tour. And they did it for two nights. They did, I think, a regular show one night. And then they did the actual video shoot the next night. Shout out to Vince Neil, Tommy Lee, Nikki Sixx, Mick Mars, the OGs
right.
of LA heavy metal. Glam
dope.
Rock.
I've seen them live.
Yes.
I've seen them live twice. It was dope.
Yes. Yes, Long Live the Crew, man. I mean, those guys are legends in any era.
Right.
But that Wild Side,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and to see Tommy Lee doing that turning drum set, I mean, it was...
Yeah, the Upside Down? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was actually in the music video.
Yes, it was. Yeah, Tommy...
Yeah, that's right.
Through the different tours that they had, Tommy Lee
right.
always had a different drum set up. For every tour that they did, one of the greatest
right.
metal drummers, the heavy metal rock drummers in the history of the genre. I'm a
right.
huge Motley Crue fan.
Same here.
Yeah, I mean, videos now. I mean, we were going back through the history of it, and when we look at the music aspect, like you said, Ray, and how artists want a quick turnaround time on it. It was a different time because you really, really had to, when you were an artist coming out, you really had to make sure that you were going to say something. If you were an artist coming out, if you were a new talent, you wanted to make sure you had something good for people to see. You weren't just going to come out there on a debut and just look pure ass because that was your job interview for the audience to know. And we've always been an intrinsic link in terms of inevitably what we saw going on in society that during the time we would see whether a current event or a particular incident, like when Pearl Jam did the Jeremy video, which was based on a classmate
right.
shooting where a student killed himself in front of his classmates in Texas. I believe it was because that video dropped in 1992, and I believe the incident happened in 1989. We look at Living Colors and Cult of Personality in terms of the video footage from different historical figures and how they how it really plays into the song.
Right.
Even with the movie soundtrack, you know, when you look at Guns N' Roses, when they did You Could Be Mine, you know, for Terminator 2. I mean, when you look at Juice with Eric B and Rakim for the movie. When you look at Boys, you know, when you look at what am I thinking of? Compton's Most Wanted, Growing Up in the Hood.
Right.
It was like
yeah, it's like a reality video, like everything that's actually happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you go back and
go ahead.
No, you go back and you listen to you watch these old videos and you're like, especially if it's from a place you come from, you look at it and it's like, oh man, remember when that park was there? Remember when that store was there? They're not there no more. But you look at the old videos here. I like to watch old videos because I like to see, coming from LA County, I like to see all the different parts of LA that's not there anymore, you know? And like the 6th Street Bridge, they used to do a lot of stuff over there. Then they tore the bridge down and now they're rebuilding it. But you're never going to have that old, the way it looked before, you know, and you watch those old videos and it's like, damn, they're really cruising through LA, 6th Street Bridge, or they're over here on Cesar Chavez, and this is like 87, 88, and I like to watch that, you know, and I like
yeah.
to watch old videos of that. And then you look at it now and it's not the same. I don't know.
You know what I like?
But,
I'll give you guys a good example. I like when guys go back to that old footage and recapture the essence. Like, I see how DJ Muggs be doing his videos. I like the little mini movie that he did for Roam
right.
the Streets, for the Death and the Magician. That was just sick because he used different types of old flicks, different types of commercials and mafia flicks, and it was weird as hell, but it went with the song structure and it went like a mini movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also, with videos, especially on the West Coast, because there's a couple of videos, when I think about it, when I saw growing up, it was like, you know, it really captured and encapsulated the culture. When we think about one of my favorite all-time videos, just from the Cars alone, in addition to the song and a banging-ass album, was King T off of 1994's King T for Life with Dippin'. You know,
the remix is like my favorite remix
yeah,
song ever.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, well, it's a top.
Yeah, that Sunday. Right there, all over the.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, and you know I what? Mean, I was with King P, probably about a couple of weeks ago, and then I shot a video for First Generation that he was in, earlier in the year, and I talked to him about that. I told him, man, that track dipping the video and everything, and he was just laughing about it. But I was just like, man, that's stuff like that. You know, I've always wanted to shoot videos, and I always wanted to be involved in that. But you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, you couldn't because the price to buy a camera was expensive. So, but I always said, man, if I get a camera in my hand, I'm gonna start shooting videos the way those videos were, you know, and the way I shoot videos, like I could shoot 100 videos in a row, bro, and they all could have low riders and palm trees in it, and I'll never get tired of it. I think when somebody says, man, I got a summer jam, it's a West Coast video, man, I'm like, bro, we're hitting LA. We're going to get some palm tree drone shots. We got to have some low riders. We got to have, you want to throw some low rider bikes in there, some this, that, and the beach if you want. And I could do those videos every day, repetition. It doesn't even bother me. Like, oh, my God, you're doing another one? I could do those every day. I love doing that. Low riders, just showing California, you know?
Man, one video, too, that I really fuck with was Frost when he did East Side Rendezvous.
That one, too.
That's another one. Man. And, of course, Cam,
right.
You know, Brother Cam, shout to him when he did Peace Treaty. You know,
right.
I mean, when you look at everything in terms of what it represented, I mean, when you look at Ice Cube's True to the Game, you know, when you saw that video, it was like it was really saying something. I mean, when you look at T-Rock and CL Smooth, yeah, when they reminisce over you, I mean, all the rhyme, but when you look at the cinematography in terms of, like, the old pictures from his family, and then the when you look at the cut, the soft cuts, the hard cuts, you know, flashback sequences, it really brings, it's like you're reliving that artist's nostalgia as they narrate that story from that point in the present time. It's just unbelievable the care and the treatment that it gets. And I think when you have a video, that's always the most important thing, the treatment in terms of how you want it expressed.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you look at videos like Ice Cube's It Was a Good Day, and
yeah,
the way he's describing everything, he actually, you look at that in the video and you're like, damn. And then you look at like Dr. Dre's It's a G Thing, Nothing But a G Thing, that's exactly what we do. You know, they show him going to the house. He's rolling up. Guys are lifting weights in the front. He goes and picks up Snoop. They head to the park, barbecue. Everybody's hanging out. And it's not, that's exactly how we do things. You know, like on the weekends especially, like, you know, you get those calls all the time. Hey, man, we're going to be barbecuing at the park. Come through, whatever, whatever. So when they shot that video like that, you could relate to that because that's the stuff we actually really do. It wasn't a lie. It wasn't an exaggeration. It was exactly what we do on a weekend anyway. So I love those videos. I love those old videos, man.
Yeah. And it was also too, when we look at the videos now, as you said, because now, you know, as technology has evolved, you know, cameras, you can get a good camera. I mean, you know, even if you use the iPhone, you can get a good shoot with it. But you can get
right.
a good camera for like $5,000. And, you know, you got everything you need with it. The red lines. When we think about especially LA, and we're just going to talk about it because obviously this is a part of the, you know, street culture, in terms of what goes on. A lot of times when we saw rappers back in the day in terms of gang affiliations, it was known
right.
if you were from LA, if you were a student of it, in reference to really understanding it. Even if you weren't from LA, if you were a student of it, you knew who was what. And nowadays, it's like you see a lot of artists out there, you know, really, even from the streets, throwing up their sets. You know, shout out to OC
right.
Genesis. I mean, J Stone, you know, and all of them.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, of course, you know, Big Y, Mitchie Slick, you know, it's like you're really seeing. And I think it's dope to where, even from that aspect, if you're really from it, Mozzie, you know, you're really seeing it in terms
of. Oh, yeah,
Mozzie. If you're going to.
Mozzie.
How. We're. obviously coming from hip-hop culture, we're not about censoring anything. As long as you are authentic in it, we think it's dope to see all aspects, because this is giving people an insight to your life of how it influenced you as an artist, you know, what you saw growing up. But I do think at times you have a lot of artists that are too eager to show certain sides of the street, and it's not, how do I say this, Ray and King? I think it's a lot of times you have to have a particular type of control, a certain nuance, an element of placement. And you just can't have a bunch of random-ass people just jumping all around a video waving guns and the shit is going to look
exactly
cool. I mean.
Right.
You know. Exactly. I mean, you know, you got artists. A over here, we've got a whole bunch of dudes acting crazy in it. Then you got artist B like Joe Moses. Shout out 5-4 VNG. And he did that joint Back Going Brazy with Future.
And I mean, the video is just dope. I mean, everybody out there, you know, and it's like, it just looks fly. You know what I'm saying? It's like everybody's like from the set, like really in it. But it just, really, it's expressing the whole culture.
Exactly. And you know what's funny about those videos?
Mm-hmm.
When everybody has like all their hood homies in there, I've already been to, and I won't get into details, but I've already been to two different court hearings and stuff that they brought out the videos and said, look, in this video, he's got this guy in there. He's got that guy in there. That guy's on the run. He's not even supposed to be around these people and they'll be using your videos against you, bro. And I laugh like, shit, these dudes really, the courts are really out there
hip-hop
looking at
hip-hop police.
Right.
Hip-hop police.
Right.
Okay.
I've seen that a couple times.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, this is, and one thing about it, on off the cuff and just being children of the culture, we're always going to tell any artist out there, whatever your vision is, you want to stay on wax or producing a video, that's fine. You know, that's on you. We're never going to tell you how to tell your story. But we will say,
right,
if you got some cases out there, and especially if you got some homies that are wanted, I think about a situation that happened with Tay-K. This fool was shooting he shot the race video while he's on the run from the police, from the feds.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because Tay-K got like 50, 45 or 57 years because this was in Texas, I believe, that he, I got to look it up again, but I believe he was convicted of murder. I know that. He was convicted of murder. I think it was one or two people that were killed. Matter of fact, those are just the murders he was convicted of. He still has an open case on another person who he killed. Apparently, I think he was trying to rob them.
Right.
But yeah, KK did a video called The Chase. I mean, and basically he shot the video literally while he was on a run from the law. I saw that shit and I was like, this dude really is real about this shit. I mean, he got crazy in, but I'm like, woo.
I'm trying to just keep it too real.
Right.
Yeah. and I think a lot of times, too, when we see a lot of stuff posted online, we're looking at a lot of these artists who are just looking to go viral. That's where the video production becomes a mockery, because it's not really about art or something good. It's just about how they can get attention. I know I'm going to be the wet blanket on humor for some of this, but some of the stuff I see, there's a difference between seeing comedy videos that are like really funny and then shit with random lunacy that to me is just ignorant as hell and has no place ever online.
Right.
Because there, right. I don't believe, especially from, you know, our black and brown culture, there's nothing wrong with having something that is an exaggeration or poking fun at things in our culture. You know, that's where good comedy comes from. It's based in real experience and how you really, you know, you as a, you know, you from your, you know, your, you know, from your Chicano, you know, Mexican heritage. You know, y'all are going to have
right.
stuff in terms of what goes on, you know, in y'all hood that it's like, you know, that's going to be funny when you look at it in terms of a caricature. Just like when we look at the black community.
George Lopez does that a lot. He brings out the funniness in the community, you know.
Yeah, in the Hispanic community, absolutely. Just like we do in African-American community. But
yeah.
I think sometimes, too, it goes wrong with some individuals because they go for the cheap laughs to where it really becomes an insult to our people.
Right.
And I look at stuff like Boom Gang used to do, and then Boom Gang got punched in the face because one of them jokes went a little bit too far.
They don't know how to,
and,
they don't know how to walk this fine line.
Right.
Right.
You know, but,
right.
Comedy, there's nothing wrong with comedy as long as you understand the type of comedy that you're trying to do and ultimately the laughs that you're trying to get.
Right.
And it's sometimes there are people that are laughing with you and then there are people that are laughing at you. And you never want to be the butt of the joke when you're being laughed at.
Right.
Because ultimately, that's the point where you're not taken seriously. Wanted to rewind a bit, Ray. In terms of when you were doing music, in terms of production, who were some of your influences in terms of, you know, that West Coast sound that really helped you to shape yours? We still got a little over an hour.
As far as production, Johnny J, Dr. Dre,
Rest
Johnny J.
Yeah,
Johnny J, Dr. Dre, you know, DJ Pooh, Sir Jinx,
shout out
Prodigy,
Jinx.
From South
him. Yeah.
Prodigy from South Central Cartel, and I know you guys had him on yesterday, right?
Yeah, we had him on last night.
Yeah.
Shout out to FCC, you know,
yeah,
Big Crodge, man.
You know, his production is up there. My brother Chill from Compton's Most Wanted. Man. The list goes on, man, but yeah, the Dr. Dre is like probably him and Johnny J are my top. Oh, DJ Muggs, Sick Jackin from Psycho Room, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the production is just, and it's crazy because some of these guys, when you hear their music, and it's like, you know off the bat, this is, see, when I started getting into making beats, I always said, I got to have my sound. I got to have my signature. When people hear it, they know that's a Ray beat. They know that's Big Ray's beat. And I feel like I accomplished that because every time somebody asks me for a beat, they don't even tell me. They just tell me, give me one of them Westlife beats, bro. And I just do me, send it to them, and they're just like, I'm rocking it. That's it. Like, it's just, they go to you for a certain sound, and they're not going to say, hey, give me a techno song because I don't do techno. So they know what I do. So when they ask me for a beat, they know exactly what they're getting. It's not going to be some surprise like, hey, what the hell is this? No, we went for you because we like your sound. And I always felt Dr. Dre had his own sound. DJ Pooh had his own sound. DJ Quick definitely had his own sound. My boy Chill, too. You know, he's very versatile. He'll go from making a dance track to R&B to gangster rap to, like, he can do it all. And then, you know, then there's guys like Large Professor, Pete Rock, Premier. But the ones who stood out the most where I was like, damn, this is what I want to get into was Dr. Dre. Like I said, Johnny J. Mostly it was Dr. Dre. And, you know, then you got DJ Pooh, too. I think DJ Pooh, when I was a kid and I first heard Act the Fool, I was like 9 years old or 10 years old when it came out. And I thought that album was just so wow. And you know, King T, you know, he reps Compton and stuff, but he also has roots where I grew up in the Valley, Pacoima and stuff like that. And
shout to Little Mexico.
So coming
out
of that, and you know, hey, that's dude that was at the shop or the Fila shop. Oh, I saw him at Ritchie Valens Park, or I saw him at the Northridge Mall. Like, this is King T. I like his album; it's dope. But I'm a kid; I don't know who produced it. So when I became a teenager and I found out, oh shit, DJ Pooh produced this, that's when I got deeper into it and like, I'm going to find everything DJ Pooh's done. And I started just dissecting DJ Pooh's production. And then same with Dr. Dre and same with Johnny J. And I was just like, man, these dudes, they're making classics. They're making hits. And then the Bay Area too. Like, I'm a big Ann Banks. I love Ann Banks.
Track of the Gun, yes, sir.
Yeah, EA Ski, Ann Banks. Shit, all the shit the Click was doing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of that stuff I was, and even the Alchemist and Evidence, Muds. I think I mentioned him already. Like a lot of these producers were. They're the reason I even picked up a drum machine, bro. Like, I wouldn't have even thought about doing any of that shit. Then I started hearing that. And then even DJing. Like, I don't DJ, but I tried to be a DJ, and it just wasn't my thing. But I tried all the elements of hip-hop. And for me to even touch a turntable, it was guys like Aladdin and Joe Cooley. And, well, now, you know, you got a bunch of different DJs now. But back then, those two DJs were like, you know, Tony G, K-Day, Battle Cat, even him as a producer too. You know, when I heard his production, I was like, damn. And but that, you know, a lot of these guys are the reasons why I picked up a drum machine or even tried to touch a turntable or any of that, you know. And it's crazy that, you know, you grow up listening to this, and now a majority of these guys are my friends, or I talk to them on the daily, or I work with them now, or I shoot their videos, or I shoot them beats, or it just, you know, it's crazy how everything goes in a circle, you know? And but yeah, it was a lot of the production that Dre was doing on the NWA. Even shout out to Yala, because he had a lot of his hands were in it too. So when I started hearing like Dope Man, man, I was a kid and Dope Man came out, and my neighbor, his dad had an old, oh man, I want to say it was a Lisi's. It was an old Lisi's drum machine, and he used to let me mess with it. And I would try to duplicate how Dre did that crazy snare roll in Dope Man. So, and I'm like 19 years old trying to do this. And then, you know, it was just I would spend hours trying to learn how to produce as a kid. And then when I was able to become, you know, when I was a teenager and I was able to afford equipment and becoming an adult, I was like, you know what, I'm going to start blowing my money on this. I remember back then, nowadays you could buy a computer and you could do your video edits and your beats on it. Back then, you wanted a drum machine, you're looking at a MPC for minimum $1,200 without the extra option. And SD-12s, you're looking at all crazy type of stuff on the money too. And then you want a keyboard, you're looking at the Trinity or the Triton or the ASR-10. That's in the, yeah, those are, exactly. So my first shit was, I had my first sampling keyboard was the Insonic Mirage. And I started using that. And then, and then when I got a little bit more money, my friend who had that HR, it was a Lisi's HR-16, a friend of mine, Jesse, shout out to him, he had that drum machine, so I got to use it when he had it. But when my friend's dad used to let me use it, his dad ended up getting locked up for like a long time. So his mom was having a yard sale one time, and he had come next door, and he was like, hey, Ray, you know, my dad got locked up. I know you used to like to mess with his drum machine. We're going to throw it out in the yard sale, but before I throw it out, do you want it? Shoot me $25 for it. I said, here, take it. And then he's like, remember my dad's Tascam recorder? Shoot me $30, take it, bam. Or 20, I give him like $50, walked out with a drum machine and a four-track recorder, which one of the tracks was messed up, so it was really a three-track. And then the drum machine, two of the buttons were messed up, so instead of 16 drums or whatever it was, I only was using like 12 of them. But just the fact that I was like, okay, I got drums, I could record, I'm in the game now. Let me go buy, and then a Casio keyboard. I had a Casio and a Yamaha keyboard. And then when I became an adult, 18, I was able to go and say, you know, fuck it, I'm going to go buy an MPC 2000. And the MPC 2000 came out like in 97, right when I was turning 18. So I was like, I'm going to get that. My cousin got it before me, and my cousin Alan and my cousin Dre, they got them, and they were messing with them, and I would go over there and mess around with it. And I was like, fuck, I got to get one of these, but the ticket on this is $1,200 without the options. So without the 8 outputs and the Cincy card and all that, so I was just like, man. So then when I actually got some money and I bought it, and it was over from there, man, I was just making beats like crazy.
Man. And thinking about that all that time in terms of what goes into really getting the inspiration to make beats and stuff? Because back in the day, I mean, when you're looking at your track layering, when you're looking at your filtering, your mids,
right,
your highs, your lows, you know, bass treble, you know, how you're, you know, recording from different aspects, using your effects. What do people really have to understand about how you really, really build a beat from, you know, articulating from what's in your, from your imagination to actually bringing it to life? The music in your mind, it
right,
becomes reality.
Well, like me, I when I first started, that was the hardest part. The hardest part was,
mm-hmm,
you could hear it in your head, but how the hell do I put it down on this machine? Like, I could hear the song in my head, the beat, but I don't know how to put it down. And even when I learned how to do it, it was just like, it's not coming out the way it is in my head. And I would spend 12-hour days, bro, 15-hour days. As soon as I was able to go into Ocean Way and Pier Lake Studios in the valley where I grew up, I was just like, I was living in these studios, and I was learning how to record and make beats, and I would spend hours and hours and hours, bro, just learning how to get the loop right or the drum pattern right. And then when I started learning, okay, this is actually everything I'm thinking in my head is actually coming down onto the machine, I'm getting there. So me, typically me, it's like, man, my wife could tell me, babe, I got to go to work. I got to go drop something off at work. Let's go. And we'll be just driving. I'll just be sitting in the car. And then I see a roll of like a mile long of palm trees and a low rider might pass by. And I'll be like, damn, I already know what I want. I'm going to make this jumpy, up-tempo, happy-ish, West Coast type of Dre Day style beat, where whoever's going to rap on it is just going to talk about sunny California. But then there'll be times we'll be driving and there's somebody's getting arrested and there's some cops out there and it's 2 a.m. We're driving by the hood and I'll just be like, man, I'm going to make the most gangsters storytelling track where somebody could just talk about what the hell we just saw on the street right now. And that's how I make my beats. Unless you call me and say, hey, Ray, we got this anthem we're trying to do. It's going to be a weed anthem or a lowrider track or this, then I'm going to specifically try to break it down for what you said. But on the normal basis, when I'm making beats just out of the blue, it's stuff that inspires me like that. So, like not too long ago, my wife was like, hey, we got to go to the market on Friday. And out here where I'm at, on Friday nights, a lot of the older guys get their lowriders together and they meet up in the parking lot of the shopping center. So we happen to go through there just to go to the market real quick, and when we were walking out, I told her, babe, drive by the, just take a, go in a circle around the, where all the cars are. So we went over there, saw some of the cars. I knew, happened to know some of the guys, so I got out, we chopped it up. Dude's hitting switches right there. I told her, we got to go home. I went and sampled some switches being hit. I started the song off with, you could hear the springs of the switches and the batteries and all that, and then from there, the song comes in there, send it to my boy Cash. He rapped on it. Next morning, it's in my inbox. Bam, they shoot the video. So it's just like your environment. But out here, like I tell people all the time, in California, we got everything out here, man. Like we don't the culture we have out here. It's like I hear a lot of producers that are from out here, and they'll tell me, man, you know, I do a lot of like boom bap or I do a lot of trap, but I'm trying to get the roots of our style of music, and I can't. And I'm like, how can't you? I don't understand that. Tell me how you're having trouble, because they're like, sometimes, oh, I don't get inspired. Like, I don't see inspiration. What do you mean? You could just walk out the street and drive up the block, and you'll see some palm trees. You'll see a lowrider. You'll see some beautiful women walking. Go to the beach. Go here. Go there. Drive down Pacific Coast Highway. You'll get some inspiration somewhere. Bro, I could just drive up the street, and I get inspired about making a West Coast track, because the culture out here is everywhere. It doesn't matter if you're in L.A., San Bernardino, San Diego, you're going to see it. And then out here, there's beaches everywhere. So it's just, for me, it's easy to get inspired. Like, I just see this shit, and it's just like, bam, I'm doing a track on that. Bam, we're in the room, everybody's smoking a blunt, passing the weed. I'm going to go home and make a weed track. Oh, we're over here, I'm going to make this type of track. You're at the homie's pad, everybody's right there. This dude's cleaning out a gun. He pulls out this. You're like, man, I'm going to make a track that somebody could talk about that style of fucking hip-hop or that style of storytelling. I try to keep it on the storytelling tip, so especially with the video, you know, you could actually make a treatment for it where it's not just stand in that corner and rap. It's, nah, man, your song starts off, you're loading this, you're rolling that, she comes in and does this, let's do it like that. And that kind of like, I don't know if you saw the video I shot for my boy Chill and JD, it's called The Purge. I don't know if you saw, it's called The Purge, it's one of, I don't know if it's the last video I shot for Chill, but it's called The Purge. And basically, he's talking about all the shit that's going on with the pandemic and everything. So we were like, man, we got to find a place to set the right environment for this. And we ended up on the way to Vegas. There's an old abandoned water park out there. And a lot of people go there. Graffiti artists like to tag it up. And it's not bullshit graffiti either. They do dope graffiti. And part of the property is burned down. So I said, why don't we shoot the video in the middle of the desert at that burned down place, and it will give you the look of the next day, the aftermath of the purge.
The apocalypse.
So,
yeah, the apocalypse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like the aftermath of it. After everything happened, bam. So they were like, fuck it, let's meet out there. So I took my daughter out there with me. She took a bunch of pictures. Dyer Lansky, you had him on the podcast. He showed up there.
Yeah.
He produced the beat. JD, you had him on the podcast too. He showed up, and I think you had my boy Chill on here too, huh? At one time.
Yeah, we've had Chill up here. Yeah.
So we all met up in the desert. We shot the video. We got the drones out. We flew it all over the burnt areas, the building falling apart, and then we just happened to see some dudes out there riding around in their off-road vehicles. Their little Raptors or whatever you call them, the little off-road little cars and shit. They were out there going crazy with it. So we filmed that and made it look like kind of like one of the movies with The Purge when the people are driving around like that. And so when you watch the video, they're rapping. The place is all grimy. It's all beat up. And then the drone shots and everything, you see that it kind of gives it an aftermath of what would happen after a purge the next day. You'd see the aftermath of buildings burned, buildings all graffitied up, or this tree got burned down, that building's messed up, these cars are all burnt up. Like, it was just a dope environment. We shot that, I forgot when we shot that. It was this year, though. They released it not too long ago. But you should check that one out. It's called The Purge by Chill. And Darren Lansky made the beat, and JD's featured on it.
I mean, so we got a legendary MC, a dope-ass producer who's a legend, and we got a legendary videographer, and all y'all come together to bring the talents together. I mean, that's a
and right there. And you got two legendary MCs because JD's on it.
Okay, yeah. So
it's JD,
so it's
and
all
the Chill.
It goes from the Tremendous Three to the Fantastic Four. Okay, so I mean, so the gang's all here.
Yeah. I tell JD all the time, man. I tell people, don't sleep on JD, man. You know, JD's on Gorillaz in the Mist, America's Most Wanted, Death Certificate, The Predator, the list goes on, bro. And you know, he was locked up for 28 years, and now he's out, and he's pushing hard. I just shot his video. We just released it. I shot two of them. We shot one last year called Put It All Together, and it's him and Chill, and Kid Frost cameos in it, Corrupt cameos in it, Trey from the Lynch Mob, Three from the Lynch Mob comes out in it. Man, it's just a dope environment. We did it at a barber shop. He actually dropped that on the first of the year on New Year Day. And we shot that one, and then we shot JD's Revenge, and he just released it. Man, do I want to say he released it this month, or was it in June? He just released it within the last month, and that one was dope too. And it was fun, too, because, you know, I grew up listening to these guys and looking up to these guys, and now I got companies with these guys and businesses, and I shoot their videos, and we work, and it's a brotherhood. So when we work, it doesn't seem like it's business. It's just like we got a camera out there and a bunch of bros just having fun, you know?
Yeah.
And then we go from there. But,
yeah.
Go ahead.
And it's always most important to have fun in a video. Now, if there's anybody who's doing videos right now that I can say this motherfucker just has all types of just living his best life, shout out to Sauce Walker in Houston, the Sauce Father, TSL. That dude just...
Right.
Sauce Walker is living his best life in the videos he does, which are many. And I think Sauce probably has done close to 50 or 60 over his career. But, you know, shout out to him, you know, Peso Peso, you know, Sosa Man.
Shit, you got to look at, you got to look at my bro, MC8. He drops videos like crazy. I just shot one for him recently. But that dude drops on a yearly basis. He probably drops 5 to 10 videos a year, anywhere between there, but at least minimum 5. But he drops a lot of videos. So does Chill. Chill, I shoot all his videos too, and Chill from CNW is dropping videos like crazy. My boy JD, I think he's dropped 3 videos this year, and he's already shot 2 other ones that are still being edited. So, you know, a lot of these guys, Mozzie too, he's always dropping work. Mozzie, Crooked Eye too. Crooked Eye's got a handful of videos out just this year alone.
And it's great to see them doing it because the metrics of how technology has come, it basically has dictated that shift now in terms of productions where everybody has to really stay out there. And this is what a lot of artists have to understand. And we're going to give artists game on Off the Cuff Radio. This is what we do. If you got great product, you give people what they want to hear. You don't want to oversaturate yourself in terms of, because you don't want people to get, you know, too tired of you. Sometimes you want to give them, want to leave them waiting and then come back and then hit them off to surprise. Conversely speaking, you know, if your shit isn't good and you keep putting shit out and it's not good and people aren't paying attention, you keep putting it out, people aren't paying attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Artists have to understand that you have to understand the temperature of where the audience is, how they're reacting to you. If you're starting out and you're really getting the buzz, yeah, give them a whole lot to begin with because you want them to know who you are. Then take a break and get them anticipating because that's marketing 101. You always leave the audience wanting more. This is one of the first rules of show business. But
yeah.
You also don't.
But you know, you got.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Guys, like, I know. I get what you're saying. Though, with the oversaturation, sometimes it's like, damn, like, what was it? It could have been 2015 or 16. Shit, Mozzie dropped a freaking mixtape and a video every month, and you know what? For me personally, I didn't get oh my god, another one. I was just like, damn, where's the next one? Where's the damn? This guy's dropping, then you got guys like I mentioned, like my boy Eight and Chill and Corrupt and JD and these guys. They'll shoot videos and videos and videos, but they don't release them right away. They'll just be on that like, look, I'm not going on tour. Yeah, because some of these guys, like Eight, he's always on tour. He's always doing shows like in Chicago or Texas or up north, or he's all over the place. So when he touch base or Chills, you know, they're in Vegas all the time. They're doing this and that. So when they touch base at home and they know they got, like, Corrupt too, he's all over the place. But when they come home and they're like, hey, I got like a month off. I'm not doing shit this month. So we'll go extra heavy and be like, all right, we're shooting 3-4 videos this month. And then that's their way of, okay, we'll shoot 3-4 videos, 5 if we can or whatever, how many we could get it in. And then they just sit on them until it's time to release them. But you know, because their schedule's so busy and they're out of town all the time. So when they touch base at home, like I just shot 3 videos for Corrupt that haven't even got released. But he's got to go back on tour and he's all over the place. So he's sitting on those when he releases them. Okay, I got them. They're right there, ready to get released. They're just waiting till the dates that they get released. So, a lot of these dudes. I got another guy. You know, I won't say his name, but he's got. We probably shot about 12 videos, 10 videos, and he's releasing them every 3-4 months, and he's just sitting on them, releasing them. But when we shot them, we shot those in a matter of 3 months. We were shooting like 3-4 mm-hmm. videos every month. Because he told me straight out, he's in the military, and he told me, I got to go back. I got to leave for a long time. So I'm out here for just some short of a time. Let's knock out as much of shit as we can. And then when I take off, at least you have all my videos. They're ready to go. And I was like, you're right. So we knocked out a shitload of videos. And then, you know, same with Eight. You know, we shoot videos. He's probably sitting on a few videos too. Chill, my boy, Chill. like I said, Corrupt sitting on 3-4 videos, and they're just sitting on them until it's time to release them, because they had the time at that moment to shoot them, you know?
Right.
When they're on tour, it's kind of like, what?
I was just saying, yeah, I mean, but yeah. Now go ahead and finish your thought, because I just want to go, I was going to speak on Maz. Go ahead.
Yeah, so a lot of dudes will tell me, like, we just got to shoot these videos because I got to go on tour for 3 months, or I'm going to be gone, or I'm doing this, so we'll shoot all those videos, and we'll edit them, put them away, and then they have them ready to go, because they just have that time to shoot them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So go ahead, you were saying about Mozzie?
Yeah, but going back to Mozzie, because I got on Mozzie around maybe 2016, when I first heard Hit and Run. Shout out to 4Rax and Kenny Tweed of the Mechanics, representing that badass bay out in Oakland, California. You know, bringing all types of, you know, business for the town in terms of them heat beats. Then I read Mozzie's story in terms of, I believe it was Complex or Spin Magazine that, you know, talked about him. And to watch his story in terms of, people really got to understand, like, Mozzie was really in the streets out in Sacramento. He was really doing it. And, you know, he had put out some music, got locked up, so he called his sister for commissary, you know, to have some money put in, you know, to see how much, you know, get some money on his books. And he was just asking her, you know, how much I got. She's like, 700? No, 7,000. Like, his music was moving heavy like that. And he was like, that's when I was thinking that I could really, really do something with it. So when he got out, you know, he took the rest of that money that he had made from the streaming and whatever, and put all of that into his music. But Mozzie, to watch what he's done with Beautiful Struggle, the joint he did, you know, with Jay Stylin and Rest in Peace, Slim 400, you know, Hit and Run, that the Mechanics produced. Mozzie, to see his growth, to see his movement, to see what he is doing. I mean, that man has just been a machine. Now he signed with CMG. Shout out to Yo Gotti and all of Memphis.
Right.
I mean, the man is doing it right now. From you being in the game as long as you have, Ray, what is it like to see an artist that you see locally? Who have you seen come up? Have you watched from their movement from when they first started to where you really see them now, and they have really become like a fixture of the West Coast? What is that like, and who have you seen do?
Man, you know what? Mozzie, yeah, Mozzie's one of them for sure. Man, with the production, seeing him come up, Scoop DeVille too, when he was first coming out, you know, Kid Frost's son. Scoop DeVille, you know, he did the recipe for Dr. Dre and Kendrick Lamar on that on the first album, with Kendrick's first album, you know, that song, The Recipe?
Section 80.
He did that
Section
one.
Section 80, yeah.
Oh, was it Section 80? And
Section 80 was the first album.
And okay, then it was the second one. It
was
the
second.
Yeah,
yeah, that was
the
second.
The recipe on this. Yeah, he did that. But watching him, you know, I would run into him every now and then. He wasn't even a producer. He was just starting. And then he, you know, he's worldwide now. And, and like we said already, Mozzie, but like on the Chicano rap side, like you got guys like my boy King Cash. There's another dude from Pomona named Drummer Boy. Watching those guys when they first started to now, they're showing their plaques and shit that they get, where they got 11 million streams and their videos got 10 million views, and it's like, damn, you know. I remember when you were just building your studio, and or you were coming to my studio and we were recording, and now these guys are huge and they're touring all over the world and stuff like that. And those are just some of the guys. But as far as, man, there's too many to name, but there's a lot of them that I've seen start from the bottom, and next thing you know, they're just blown up. But like I said, my boy King Cash and, you know, Drummer Boy, shit, Mozzie, man, I'm drawing a blank, but there's a lot of them. But I've seen a lot of producers and even engineers, like my boy, produced by 100. he started getting into engineering, coming to my studio to engineer, and then now he's engineering for Drummer Boy and Snoop Dogg and what's her name? Asia, and just people on the Empire roster that he's been engineering for. So to see that was just dope, you know. And it's dope just to see these guys starting off, and then next thing you know, they're like, damn, you know, you're engineering tracks with Snoop now. I remember when you were here just learning, you know, and it just gets bigger and bigger. And it's dope. I love to see that, man. I love to see it, you know, people excel in this game. What happened?
What do artists have to understand? Yeah, King was saying just to watch their growth. What do artists getting into the music game have to understand in terms about building their audience and how, you know, as long it takes, you know, how long it may possibly take for their music to start connecting with people?
Right. See, I always laugh about this, and I tell people, you know, the term bedroom producer doesn't mean stay in your bedroom. Yeah, you make beats in your pad in the bedroom and stuff in your room, but I always tell people, you know, I know obviously the pandemic stopped that for a while, but you got to get out there. You got to go hit shows. You got to get studio sessions, link up with different artists. If an artist tells you, hey, man, I got a track you produced for me, I'm going to be over here at so-and-so studio recording at it, man, go to the studio session, record it, document it, put it on your IG. Go to concerts, go to shows. If an artist you produce is going to be opening up for somebody like Ice Cube or Sugar Free or something, shit, go to the show, man. Get some footage of that. Get out there. Start building relationships. Start showing your work. Build your catalog. And then slowly, your following will get up there. People will like your work. Hey, man, that beat you did for so-and-so was dope. How much are you selling beats for? Oh, then it just keeps growing. And always keep business kosher, man, because you start hearing a lot of horror stories about bad business in here. And people don't want to. They might say that producer, that videographer, that engineer, that rapper, they're dope, but they're bad business. I don't want to fuck with them. And
right.
So yeah, their work speaks for itself, but their business is not kosher. So, but then you go with guys that are like, oh, this dude's an up and comer. His beats are dope, but I want to keep working with him. And then you never know. You might hit that one hit one day, and it's like, oh shit, that's the one that got me up there. But I see a lot of people who have a lot of respect for certain people because of the business, and working in the studio was more of a comfort than it was oh my God, I don't want to be here or something. A business, it was more of a, hey, we just chilling, two dudes cooking up something in the studio. And then you just got to build relationships, man. If you get invited to go places, go. If, you know, if you from San Diego or you from L.A. or you from wherever, Orange County, start linking up with people in your county right there. Start linking up with people in the city you grew up in, and reach out to people. Don't just stay in your house. Like, get out. Go out. Go to shows. Even if it's a show, there used to be a place in, I don't know if they still do shows there, but there used to be a place on Broadway in L.A. It was called The Airliner. And it was a little spot, and it was like two or three stories, and each floor had a stage. But you would go to these shows, and they were kind of grimy little underground shows. But if you showed up, you would run into people like King T would show up to some of these underground spots. B-Roll would just go there, just jump on the turntables and start DJing. You would run into guys like the Beat Nuts and, you know, just different artists out here, you know, Glasses Malone and Crooked Eye and Locksmith, and they would all, a lot of the Licks, Freestyle Fellowship, AC Alone, Project Blow, all these artists would show up to these underground spots. So if you would go to these spots, you would run into them, and they would interact with the people, they would talk, they would be at the bar hanging out with people outside on the patio. So it's like, dude, you're around all these people, and you're just standing there? Get your ass up there and start talking, build a relationship, show some of these dudes your tracks. Hey, man, here's my number. Hey, check out my YouTube page. Check out this. This is the work I do. And me, that's how it was with me. You know, I stayed behind the scenes for years. You know, I was working with so many different artists, and I would stay behind the scenes. It wasn't until MySpace came out and people were coming to my studio and taking pictures with me and recording the sessions. And next thing you know, people are hitting me up like, hey, you had so-and-so in the studio? Yeah, how did you know? Oh, they put a picture of you guys on MySpace, or then Instagram came out and Facebook, and it was like, I saw a video of you working with Glasses or Glass Malone, or you were in the studio with BG Knockout or this guy. And I'm like, how in the hell do you guys know that? And it was like, all this shit was on social media now, Twitter, all that. So then I was like, I can't hide in behind the scenes no more. I got to actually show my face now. So I started just being involved now. And then next thing you know, people were like, oh, shit, Ray, you recorded that? Hey, can you record for me? Hey, Ray, you shot that video. Can you shoot mine? And a lot of my beginning work was word of mouth. But you can ask anybody I've ever worked with, and they'll tell you straight out, it was always a pleasure working with him. It was dope. We had a good time. The business was good, and it wasn't a bad experience. Like, I don't have no bad experiences with anybody. Like, it's always been, we keep it cool, you know. Everybody, a lot of respect, a lot of the business. As long as the business is right and we're straight up and everything's working good, and then, you know, the next guy, hey, I like your video. Who did that? Oh, Ray did that. This is, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then it just domino effect. And I tell a lot of these dudes, you know, when you start off, you start building some songs. You start putting out some singles. You want a feature with so-and-so, just reach out to them. Just get a feature from Sugar Free or Corrupt or whoever you want. And just push that song and let's do this. And then you just start building. Like, with this day and age, like I told you, things are like, I call it disposable, you know, like the disposable era. Everything is, you made a song today, tomorrow it ain't popping no more. Next week it's dead already. So you gotta keep it moving. So I tell a lot of these artists, if you're gonna get your foot in there, and if you're gonna get into this business, go in there with both feet, bro, because you dropping a song today and then 3 months later you drop another one, nobody's gonna care. Everybody's gonna be like, oh, I remember him. He did a song 3 months ago. Or you're posting on social media one time every 3 months. It's not gonna work. In this day and age, you gotta be posting all the time, showing your new music, your new links, your new videos. And if a lot of these dudes, if you treat it like a hobby, it's gonna end up as a hobby. If you treat it as a job, you're gonna get paid. And I treat this like a
that part.
I treat this like a. Look at my IG, bro. Look at my Twitter. Look at all that. I'm always posting stuff. And it's not always me. I'm always posting like I was just at Be Real TV with my brother JD. And it was like, we in here. I got JD on the fucking Be Real TV. I'll get footage of him. Hey, bro, look at this footage, man. Let's post it up. Let's do this. I'll be in there with, Dyer Lansky. Get some studio footage of him. You know, Cash from the Alcoholics. Like, whoever I'm working with, Chill, Eight. Whoever, Crooked Eye, I got footage of Crooked Eye and Glass Malone in the studio I've never released. And it's like, but I take all this so people can see this working and see them working and keep people interested. Like, people want to see that because at the end of the day, I do this for a living. I've been involved in the hip-hop scene since 97, 98. I live and breathe this. So it's not only a job. It's a lifestyle. It's a career. But it's fun. And I'm also a fan. So when I work with guys like JD and Glasses Malone and Sugar Free and guy Yuck Mouth, and when I work with them, these are guys that I grew up listening to. I'm a fan of their music. So I want to make sure everything I do for them comes out dope. But at the same time, I want it to come out dope so people don't say, dope song, but who the fuck did this? It's whack. Like, the dude who shot your video, that's whack. Or the dude who made the beat, that's terrible. I always want both of us to shine. And it's fun. You know, it's this whole industry could be fun if you make it fun. If you make it, it could be miserable too, bro. I know a lot of artists, Ray, man, I'm trying to get this out there. It doesn't work. And I'll tell them, look, you dropped the album in January. Your last post was last month. You haven't even promoted the album. And, of course, your next project is going to be the same because nobody knows anything because you're not keeping up to date with shit. You got to post, right, man, like back in the day, it was, let me get on this radio and do an interview. Let me go throw my mixtape to this DJ so he could play it at the club. Let me hit this local article magazine, this magazine, so I could get on an article so people could see me when they read it, so people could hear me when KD's playing it or the Wake Up Show. Or you gotta reach out to these people. And when you don't, you know, it's just laziness. A lot of people don't do it. A lot of people just... put a song out there and think it's just going to blow up on its own. No, you got to be pushing shit. And then you got guys that are actually pushing and they're moving. And it's funny. An artist told me the other day, I just did a track with this guy, Ray. Listen to the song. What do you think? I told him the song is dope. And he's telling me, I think I want to take the dude on the second verse off. Why do you want to take him off? I went to his social media. He doesn't post shit for nothing. So that means I'm going to promote the fucking song by myself, and he's not going to help me because he doesn't even post. So I threw this guy on a song, and he's not going to help me promote it. That means I'm doing all the work, and it's both of our songs. And I thought about that, and I was like, it's kind of a fucking weird thing to hear, and it might sound fucked up, but it's true. If you're not out there active and posting, he's got a point. Why am I going to work with you? Because that means I got to promote this shit by myself because you're not going to help because you don't even help on your own project. So I see that and I'm like, but when I first heard that, I was kind of like, bro, that's crazy. What the fuck are you talking about? He's dope. But then when I sat there and broke it down, I was like, he's right. He's absolutely right. He's like, take it back to the 90s. He's that guy that, wait, we're going to go do a show, and he tells you, I can't go. Oh, I can't go to this show. I can't go. Oh, you're hitting the radio station. I can't go. Oh, you're going to the Power 106. I can't go. Well, if you can't go anywhere, how the hell are they going to even know who you are? What, I got to promote your stuff and my stuff at the same time? No, it's not going to work. So I look at it like that aspect of the 90s up until now. It's like, bro, you don't even have to get out of your house, bro. You can just sit here posting and interacting with people. And if you can't even do that, bro, I get what dude's saying. And now that's something that sticks in my head. Like, he's right. If you don't stay active, at least posting on social media, nobody's going to know shit about your new music. Because nobody buys magazines no more. Fuck. I don't even remember the last time I listened to the radio. Who listens to the radio anymore? Nobody's on going to Power 106 or there's no more wake-up show. None of these old outlets are around. So you gotta actually do this independently. And that means you got to get your own songs recorded. You got to have somebody mix them. You got to hire a PR team if you can't do it yourself. You got to be active posting, find some videographers. You actually got to put in the legwork. And that's just the music side. Now you got to get into I got to publish my stuff. I got to get my publishing right with one of these pros, C-Stack, BMI, ASCAP, whoever. Now they got SoundTrust. You got to do all this shit yourself. And a lot of these dudes nowadays, they're lazy to do all that. So they just kind of like, oh, I'm just going to put songs out on SoundCloud. Or I'm going to put songs out. Not saying that's bad, but they're just putting songs out lazy. But they're wondering why they're not getting paid what they should be. You always hear people complaining, oh, streaming doesn't pay shit. Streaming's whack. I can't make a living off of this. I can't do this. I can't do that. Yeah, well, if you get off your ass and push the shit out of your music, you could make a couple of racks or at least something off of your streams. Make something off of your videos on YouTube. Get some merch out there and start making merch, getting paid on your merch. And like your guys out there, shit, jump on there. Hit up these podcasts. Follow me, man. I'm an up-and-coming artist, but nobody really knows who I am. Can I get an interview from you guys? Like, I want to get on your podcast, interview me, and get out there. But a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people are just lazy with it. Or some of them are lazy. Some of them got jobs and families, and this is more of a second thing to them. And obviously you treat it like it's a second. It's a hobby. It's a second thing. You're not going to get paid like if it's your number one thing. And I see that a lot. Nobody buys CDs no more unless it's like some collector edition that you're selling or vinyl. Or you support that artist, but nobody's going to you can't walk into a store and buy CDs. What, Walmart? Walmart and Target maybe? But nobody's buying CDs. Nobody's even buying downloads from iTunes anymore. Everybody's just, it's so easy to pay $10 a month on Spotify and listen to anything you want. So that's what the world we're in. So you got to be active on social media. You got to be moving, turning. So I know my boy JD probably on this, he's listening as we're talking right now. He knows, man, we talk about this all the time. Like, what is the next avenue? What is the next? And people are doing NFTs now. People are doing the metaverse and virtual this and virtual that. You got to stay up to the times if you want to stay in this business. And a lot of people have that old mentality where, oh, I got to I got to get on this radio station, or I got to hit this magazine up. And my answer to them is like, okay, show me what magazine is out. Where can I go to the store and buy this magazine? Show me where I can listen to this radio station, because they're not around anymore, bro. You can't do it like that no more. You got to actually get off your ass and push this. Or you've got to come out the pocket and hire a manager, publisher, PR team, and have them push yourself. Either way, you got to either come out the pocket or get off your ass. And things are always changing. Everything's evolving all the time. Like I just mentioned, NFTs and the merch game. If you're an artist, you got to have your brand. You got to push your merch. You got to push, I just did 50 CDs and 50 vinyls, collector edition. Who wants to buy them? You gotta have your whole brand's gotta be out there with merch and your own CDs and vinyl and your own website or your IG. You gotta be popping. Get your videos out there. But a lot of people, they don't follow what's happening now. They still got the older mentality, and it's like, that's why you're not getting what you're supposed to be getting. Some of these songs I hear, I'm like, man, that shit is. Oh, why in the hell is this not blown up? Oh, I forgot. You put it on IG one time. You never put the video up on YouTube. That's why nobody knows about it. So you just got to be active with this shit all the time. And me personally, man, like, I won't. If you need a video shot, I'll do it. Even if you're the biggest artist in the world or you're just starting. But as far as, hey, let's collab on a beat, and I get hit up all the time, let's collab on a beat, or let's collab on this track. I want a beat from you. I want to rock. And now I think about it as the way homie told me. Now, you know, you're not really active. You're not really out there. You're not pushing shit. You don't go to venues. You don't do anything. So why would I want to put a song out where it's just going to sit on the shelf? Nobody's going to know who it is. It's the needle in the haystack. You go on Spotify? Yeah, it's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. It's everywhere. But nobody knows that it's even there. So you're not going to make no money off of it. But there's so many ways to make money off of this. You just got to get off your ass and push it.
Yeah.
Talking about that. Well, I mean, and you know what? We're going to continue the conversation in addition. And what up, JD, if you're listening, man? It's great to have you with us. When we think about the game and everything you said, Ray, this is why Derek and, Derek CPT and Dave One fuck with you so heavy. Shout out to our homies out in Compton, man. They said nothing but great things about you.
Derek's the homie. Dave One's a bro, too, man.
Yeah, man. And one thing about it is, I don't know if I told King this story, and I may have, but if not, I'll say it on air, because what you said it's so important about artists getting out there, because it's one thing about getting out there in terms of, you know, getting your exposure, talking, you know, getting on the blog. I'm going to be a little long-winded, but it's all going to tie up like a nice bow. Artists have to understand, when you have a product, there are certain people like Beyonce, Jay-Z, Nas, Griselda. They're just going to drop the music. They're going to drop the video maybe one time. Everybody's going to be foaming at the mouth because it's something new and they got a fan base. When you're established at that level, you can put it out and everybody's going to jump on it. If you're an artist that is still trying to get out there, I think about a lot of the artists, even out here in Virginia. I'm not, from my hometown. I'm not on my, shading anybody. This is not what we do on this show. We don't embarrass anyone.
Right.
But I've seen a lot of artists from this area who think that they're so hot, and my thing is, it's like, y'all just local. I'm like, y'all don't even have a song that's moving on the streaming. I'm like, how can you really say you're major and you really haven't done anything outside of the area? You know, you're not touring.
Right.
You not even really, you're doing the regular spots, but it's like that's not even selling out. You're not moving like that. And another thing too is when an artist wants to be on a podcast, they have to understand, and we don't say this from an arrogant perspective being journalists, but we do want a certain amount of respect. And our thing is, we're extending a platform to you because we believe in you, but you are not entitled to get a place on our show. If we invite you to come on, that is different. I say that because, and I think if I didn't tell King this story, and I may have, but I'll say it again. So this was about 3 years ago. This was the night
And shout out OG Scoop down in Houston, right hand man to J Prince of Rap-A-Lot. What up, Scoop? So we were having Scoop on the show that night. So I'm in the barbershop getting my hair cut, and a local rapper, you know, overhears me and my barber. Shout out to Big Rob representing Houston as well. You know, my big homie, Rob Pratt, solid guy. So me and Rob were talking. So, you know, he just asking me about who we got on the show that night. I tell him, you know, because it's a hometown homie from Houston, you know, and he, you know, I think he knows Scoop. So anyway, we talking. So then this one dude in shop says, I want to interview. So my thing is, you know, I'm like, okay, well, let's run about my bro. This is King's show. You know, I'm just blessed to be a part of it. You know, so it's like, you know, right. But, you know, we do this together. So I'm like, let me run it past Tim, and we'll see what comes of it. So then he asked for my IG information. Now, at the time, I was following a lot of people on IG, so I didn't know there was an algorithm that was set for how many followers you have and how many people you're actually following. So I had, like, way more I was following than he was actually following me. So it wouldn't let me get on his page. So then he makes the remark about, oh, you one of those people that have people follow you but don't follow them back. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, excuse the fuck out of you? So this is a young boy, too. So, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm like, you know what, I'm not even getting to it. So then he gets in his feelings about that. But there was one thing that he did not do, King and Ray, that I always remembered. It was like, you know what, we're not putting that. He never bothered to shake my hand.
And I think you told me this story the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, he never bothered to shake my hand.
It's that part of that bipolar business, because you know the music business is bipolar. I've been saying that for years. I told T-Max this, welcome to the music business.
Right.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, but he came at me like he wasn't like, we're just going to throw him on the show because he's trying to get on, you know, and it's like, I was listening to his music. It's like, I mean, it's okay, but it just sounds like everything else that's out there, you know. And I don't want to come off being a dick about it, like a snobbish dick about it, but it's like, you know, we really rock with artists who we really see who are hungry, who are humble, who really appreciate, you know, interacting with people, you know, and don't act like they're entitled. You know, and that's all we ask for as journalists, as men. Respect us. Respect our platform. And we're going to do the same for you. Because, you know, because for this show, which we're so glad to do it, we don't care if you're super popular. We don't care if you have 1 million followers, if you have 10 followers. If your shit is dope, if you're a good person, we've done shows with pop artists in terms of painters. What up, Sinister Monopoly? Real name Jason Barbour, out in Manhattan Beach, California. You know, hope you're well. Shout out Kimberly, you know, Jane, you know, doing her event photography. Shout out Chef Shay, you know, doing her thing in Vegas, cooking it up. Shout out, of course, you know, to Tyrone Burton, TK from Parenthood. You know, shout out to Stevie Ray, you know, from one half of the Harlem Heat, brother Booker T, professional wrestler. So we've done a wide range of people, and we're blessed to do it, you know. And we just want, you know, we love the idea that we can help somebody get out there, you know. But all we're asking is respect us, and don't look at us like we're supposed to give you an interview because of who you think you are. And we've had a few of those, too. We're not going to mention their names. Me and my brother, we've talked about this off the air, about certain artists who want to charge us to bring them on.
I would say this, too. We got a lot of people on the line calling from the West Coast. So if anybody want to tap in and, you know, chime in and show some love, all you got to do is just press 1, and you can definitely talk to Westlife. You can talk to us. Shoot questions to us, whatever you like.
Yeah, you know that.
Yeah, a lot of people are hitting me up, telling me that they're listening.
Tell everybody out there, Ray, we really appreciate y'all. Shout out you all are the reason we are inspired to do what we do. California, for all the West Coasters out there, I don't want to get too emotional with it. You all have opened up doors of courtesy. You all have shown us so much love throughout this eight-year journey. King started this 8 years ago. I've been with it for the past five. Shout out to Kenya Ware, of course, JD, Chill, Spice One, you know, CMG from Conscious Daughters, you know, Richie Rich, you know, CJ and Mitchie from Wrong Kind, Derek, Day One, you know, Dyer, you know, Shorty, rest in peace, from Lynch Mob. All of you have been so gracious with your time, so genuine with your friendship, so giving with your cooperation. You all are a second home for us, which we have not visited yet, but we're going to. We're coming out there to see all y'all. Uncle Coke, Uncle Hutch, you know, everybody. I just want to say that on our behalf, man. We love y'all. We appreciate you so much for, you know, tapping in with us tonight with one of your homegrown very own, a living legend, you know, someone who does your turf proud, who, you know, we can't say enough good things about.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, it's all about, this is what it's all about, being able to connect. When you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, your time in terms of school, Ray, in terms of, you know, everything you did in between, because everybody has their backstory as well in terms of the educational aspect of when you were really finding your way through it. Tell us about that. We got a little bit of time left. Go ahead.
Well, shit, I grew up in the Valley, like I said. I went to Monroe High School, and after that, I went to DeVry, got my degree in DeVry, and then I got another degree in Biblical Studies, and that's more of my educational background. And then I took everybody knows about the Los Angeles Recording School, right? Well,
right.
Before it was a big ass corporation now and a huge building that they have over there in Hollywood. It was in the Valley in this little shack, two-story little shack house thing, and it was called Alley Recording Workshop. So they were the only people around that at the time that would let me actually, you know, I was doing a lot of stupid things in the street, and I met a dude who was going to school there. So he would let me go to school there, and they were the only place that I could actually walk in there with somebody and start messing with an SSL board. So without having to pay. So this dude used to take me in there, and he used to show me, his name was Jeff, and he used to take me up there, and he used to tell me, hey, if you want to learn how to record, man, the bass player is coming in right now. He needs to record his part for this and that. So I would learn how to use these boards and everything. And then I never went to the school, like, actually enrolled, but I was there every other day, dude, just learning how to calibrate reels and learn how to use the boards and learn how to mic up a drum set. And I was like 17, and I'm trying to learn. I'm soaking all this shit in. And while everybody's out there, you know, and then when I would hit studios and people are out there partying and stuff and smoking in the studios and doing that, I'm sitting next to the engineer watching what he's doing. So then I said, this is what I want to do, even though I have a degree in electronics, which is what I normally do, because normally I'm in IT when I have a 9-to-5, but, you know, these last 5-6 years it's just been straight music. And then, so I went to school for that, but music is like what I do. That's like everything. And as far as music, is like if I learn something new, anytime something new comes out, I want to soak it up. I want to go learn how to use it. And if I don't know how to use it, I'll find somebody else who knows how to use it, and I'm going to watch them do it and have them, I'm going to learn. And if I can't find nobody, then I'm going to sit here at home and work on that shit until I know how to get it, even if it takes a day or a year. So that's where I'm at with a lot of the stuff on the learning process. But as far as like education, yeah, I went to DeVry. I went to Monroe High School. I have a degree in electronics. I have a degree in biblical studies. And music is my thing, you know?
Definitely. And you also had out, you know, you're also part of the outreach program at UCLA. Although you're a diehard Trojan, you're not a Bruin, you're a Trojan fan at
all. It's both of them. I took classes for both of the spots. But I'm a Trojan. I love. I'm a USC fan. But yeah, man, this whole music game, bro. It's crazy because, you know, when you're a kid, 8 years old, and you got, you know, you're buying NWA albums. And, well, I couldn't buy them. I would have my Uncle Angel buy them for me. I'd walk in the room and be like, he's actually the one that got me into hip hop. I was probably like 7 years old, and he was staying with us, and he gives me a tape, and he's like, hey, mijo, I got to take off. Listen to this. And it was 6 a.m. by Ice-T. So I heard it, and I was like, what the hell is this? You know, I'm only like six, seven years old. I'm like, what the hell is this? And
right.
I'm like, this is dope. So I'm bumping that, and then the next year, I save up some money, and I tell him I'm going to go buy a CD, but they're not going to let me buy it. So he walked into Tower Records off Parthenia. If anybody knows anything about the Valley off Parthenia, there used to be, now it's a shoe warehouse or something, but there used to be a Tower Records right there where DJ Pooh and J-Ro from the Lick used to go digging all the time. And so he takes me there, and I tell him, hey, I want to buy this the CD. So we buy it. It was Two Shorts, Born to Mac. That was actually the first album I ever bought with my own money. And and I'm starting to get into hip-hop. I'm only 7 years old, 6 years old. And, you know, then from there I went to Eazy-E, NWA and the Posse, you know, and then my collection of records and CDs has got crazy. But that's how I got into the whole hip-hop scene, man. But it's a trip how my first introduction that somebody actually gave me a tape that was explicit lyrics. It wasn't something I heard on the radio. Because I would hear hip-hop on the radio every now and then, but the first tape anybody ever gave me was 6 a.m. by Ice-T, the single. And it was my uncle. And 2 weeks ago, I was just on stage with Ice-T filming him perform 6 a.m, bro, live. So I was like, I was actually filming him thinking in my head, wow, bro. When I was 6 years old, I was bumping this song. Now I'm actually watching and filming this shit live. It was just a trip where hip-hop takes you in this world, you know, because, like, when people say, I heard somebody say, this is a cliche. Hip-hop saved my life, because a lot of people say that. And I'm like, how is that a cliche? Because hip-hop did save my life, because instead of out there still in the street selling drugs or doing gangbanging shit or neighborhood shit, hip-hop put me in the studio, and I'm working 12, 15 hours on music and learning how to record when I could have been out on the streets doing stupid shit for those 15 hours. But instead, I'm in this damn studio sleeping on the couch and just going every day, waking up. I was waking up every day with a purpose now. Because before it was just like, what are we going to do today? I'm going to get up, get some beer, go kick it in the hood with the homies. Whatever happened, happened. Now I'm waking up with a purpose. I'm getting up. I'm going to go to the studio. I'm going to learn how to record. The track we made yesterday, I'm going to learn how to mix it down today. You know, I had a purpose for waking up and going out and doing things. So, yeah, hip-hop saved my life completely, bro. Now hip-hop is actually giving me a way of providing for my family. So I've seen the different transformations of hip-hop. I know the history of the history of hip-hop, especially on the West Coast, but hip-hop saved my life as a teenager, and now hip-hop is providing a way of providing for my teenagers, my kids. So it's crazy how the whole circle goes in a circle, you know, like, because I hear people say, oh, that's a cliche, hip-hop saved my life. Yeah, a lot of people say that, but no, it's true, because a lot of us could have been out there gangbanging, still selling drugs, out there doing stupid shit and then getting locked up, but instead we're in the studio doing music. I was watching an interview with Birdman, and Birdman was like, after I got out of prison and I started the label and we had a home studio, I said, I got to get these kids out of the street selling dope and get them into living into the studio. And he says to this day, I'm so happy I got Wayne out of the street into the studio, and now Wayne is, as we know it, is one of the biggest artists to ever touch the microphone. But imagine there was no such thing as hip-hop, or Birdman didn't get a studio and start the record label and all this, half these, you know, people could have been locked up, lost their lives, and instead they became some of the dopest artists we ever seen or heard, or just, they're just there, you know. And like, thank God for hip hop, because I don't know, God knows what I would have been doing if I didn't have music, bro. I probably would have been doing some dead or in jail stuff, you know. So that's why I tell the people, when I see youngsters who are out there in the street, but then they, hey, I'm going to try to learn how to make beats. And then it's like, hey, man, look, listen to this beat I made the other night. Listen to this beat. Listen to this beat. And then you find out this dude's not even in the streets anymore. He's just in the house making beats all day. Damn, music really stopped this kid from actually getting into trouble. So it's just dope where music is and where hip-hop is right now from to the beginning of where it was at. You know, I grew up listening to music, and now I'm actually doing it. I grew up listening to these artists, now I'm actually working with them. And, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of my influences, like King T, shooting videos with King T, working on stuff with King T, The Chill, 8. You know, I got a business, I got a company right now called CGR, and it's with The Chill from Compton's Most Wanted, Corrupt, and myself. It's called CGR. And I'm actually like, damn. I actually have a company with two of these guys that I consider brothers now that I talk to on the daily, and our families know each other. Our kids know them, each other. Our wives know our wives. Like, coming from listening to these guys to now, I actually, these are my brothers. I work with them, and we actually, it goes beyond music. It's like a whole trip for me. It's like, wow, I went from listening to these dudes to being looking up to them, and now I work with them, and they're my brothers, and I have companies with them now. And it's like, it's just dope how this shit, this music game works. Like, hip-hop is just crazy, where you could get somebody out of the streets and get them out of trouble and make a living off of this. And then I feel, as being in this game as we are, and I talk to JD about this a lot too, and Chill, that now that we're, that I'm in this position, or we're all in a position now, now we got to reach out and get somebody else out of the street and have them into this game now and get people off of this bullshit and get them out of the whole street life and get into the music game, man, because regardless if you're still in the streets, you're listening to music. So why not get involved with it? Learn how to record. Learn how to do beats. Bro, I can tell you right now, I have given out so many laptops, dude, to so many youngsters, so they can learn how to record or learn how to make beats or learn how to do this music shit or learn how to edit videos. That's a whole other thing. All my old cameras, I've given out a handful of cameras to youngsters so they can learn how to record and learn how to get into videography or photography or whatever. Sometimes people come to my house and be like, hey, Ray, man, I've been here like 2 or 3 times. I see that Canon is just sitting there. You don't use it no more? No, it's just sitting there. Bro, can I get it? I'm trying to get into videography or photography. Bro, I'll give you the camera if you promise me you're going to use it. And then 90% of the people I give equipment to, bro, they became either a photographer, learned how to make beats, learned how to do this, and then they're still sticking with it. And I feel like, damn, I could have sold that laptop or I could have did this, but giving it to this youngster, and now he's actually doing what he said he was going to do, shit, that was all worth it, bro. That was the dopest shit right there. And seeing that and seeing the progression is like, damn, investing in this dude and just giving him that, kept him off the street, and now he's doing this. And he's been doing it for the last 5 years. That's dope as fuck. And I think all of us have a responsibility of reaching out and helping somebody to get him out of the street or get him out of an environment that they shouldn't be in. Because jail's not cool, bro. Prison's not cool. Being involved, being on the run from the cops is not cool. Selling dope is not cool. You know, I've done all that. I've never been to prison, but being in trouble with the cops and selling dope and doing this shit in the streets, man, I'll tell you right now, and anybody could say, oh, this fool's stupid or he's talking out of his ass or whatever, but I am ashamed that I did all that shit. I'm ashamed that I was out there shooting and selling dope and encouraging another young dude to go do a crime. And now I look up at my older homies, and I'm like, man, these motherfuckers had me doing stupid shit at the age of 15. That's not a role model. That's not something that you should be teaching some kids. Man, get these dudes out of the street. If you could help this dude get into drawing, shit, go buy him a bunch of pencils and markers and notebooks and shit. If you could get this guy into photography, teach him how to do it. Give him an old iPhone that you have laying around. Teach him how to use that. Whatever you could use, give away some of your shit to help these dudes get out of the street, or take them with you. Hey, man, I got to go shoot this video. Come with me. I'm going to show you how to do this. Oh, you were into photography? I got this photo shoot. Come with me. Actually, my daughter, I take my daughter a lot of places. She does videos. She does photography. She does interviews. She does all types of shit. I take her with me so she could learn how to do this, you know?
Come on.
I don't know, man. This shit, I just feel like we're responsible to give back, you know?
But, yeah, and that's the most important thing. I mean, because we definitely want to, for the next generation, man, I mean, we got to set a tone, man. You know, because the thing is, the children are our future indeed, and we want that future to be bright and full of promise with the fruits of prosperity. We don't want to give them the rotten remains of a decayed civilization. And this has been one of the most thoughtful, insightful, intelligent, educational 2 hours, man. Ray, thank you. For all of y'all listening, thank you for listening, spending your evening with us. Ray, you know you're welcome back anytime. Tell IC, Corrupt, King T, tell all of them. Only because JD, Chill, and Dyer have already been on the show, and they know they're welcome back anytime. You know,
right.
Tell everybody, tell all of them, tell Ice and all of them who follows our page, and tell them thank you so much for following Off the Cuff Radio. Tell Ice T, he's welcome to come on the show anytime. He just needs to tell us when he wants to come on, and we're ready. Along with Corrupt, all your everybody, Crooked Eye,
right.
Deep Nuts, everybody. Before we close shop, Ray, any shout outs you want to give anybody?
Man, when it comes out to the shout outs, I always miss somebody, but shout out to everybody, bro. All my brothers, anybody I consider a brother. Everybody who's ever bought or listened to any of the music I do, watched the video, anything, man. Like, that's why another thing, you know, like, when I don't have merch at the moment, but when I do merch, I give it away for free half the time. Oh, you bought a CD, or you bought the vinyl, or, oh, you were listening to this, or you were listening to that. Shoot me your address, man. I'm going to send you a hat. I'm going to send you a shirt. I'm going to send you, we're not doing face masks anymore, but I'll be like, I'll send you a face mask. I'll say, whatever, I'll just send it out for free just because of they showed love, you know. Like, I'll just start handing out stuff. But, yeah, man, shout out to everybody, man. And then guys like me and JD, we got something in the works. You know, me and Dyer Lansky, shout out to Lansky, man. That's a cool dude right there. We got some stuff in the works. Like I said, me, Corrupt, and Chill got that company. We got a lot of things coming out, videos, albums, shit, merch, all types of stuff. But, yeah, shout out to everybody, man, you know. Shout out to hip hop, bro.
Definitely, man.
That's what it is, man. We definitely enjoyed the beer.
Yeah, man. A lot of these people show support, man. Shout out to my wife, bro. My wife put up with a lot of my bullshit, and you know, she's never been one of those women that, where are you going? You can't go here. You can't do this. And she always so supportive. And anybody who knows me, or anybody I shot a video for, they know that usually my wife's right there getting behind the scenes, taking some pictures. She's involved, and she tries to do her part, you know. Even though she's got her own job and her own career, she tries to show love on my stuff, too. So shout out to her, man.
Definitely.
Yeah, man, we're about to wrap this up, man. We thank you once again for building with us. We definitely going to keep you posted. Anything that you post in regards of videos, content, we're going to definitely share it and support you guys for pushing that New West movement. So we definitely going to keep in touch.
Hell yeah. Anytime, man.
Appreciate you so much, man. Thank you again.
Yeah, 30 minutes turning to 2 hours. Easy, huh? Right. I'll be telling people,
yeah,
man, once you get, even my boy Chill, he'll be like, once you get Ray talking, man, he don't stop. And I go, my mouth is monetized. Why would I stop talking?
Look, we're here for all of it.
Right.
Thank you again.
Shout out to you guys, man.
Appreciate
hit me up anytime
you
guys
so
want
much.
Me back.
Yes, sir.
Hell yeah, for sure.
All
right, good luck.
King, take us out of here. All right.
On that note, we out of here. Catch y'all next week. Same time, same channel. We out.
Peace.
All right.